introduce the speakers in turn, and we'll have time for questions afterwards, after each speaker, I'm sure, and at the end as well. So I'm going to start by introducing Jessica, who I've also, it's interesting, met through some more regional climate work, on a climate hub work. So Jessica's here with the Community Energy Association Climate Initiatives. She's a specialist program manager for the Kootenai Clean Energy Transition and Rosslyn, BC's Retrofit Assist Initiative. Jessica's passionate about helping communities collaborate and move forward with climate action through the lens of community resilience and well-being. Prior to joining CEA in 2021, she spent 15 years working in the utility industry, focused on community engagement and sustainability, environmental management, energy efficiency, energy poverty, and renewable energy technology. Jessica lives with her family in the small community of Fauquier, not too far from you in the Arrow Lakes region. So I'm going to turn it over to Jessica to share her screen, and she's quite willing to share her slides later, so we'll get the recording and slides shared with you later. Over to you, Jessica.
Perfect, thank you. You can see that okay?
Yes.
Okay. And please help me keep track of people with their hands up and stuff if there's questions, because it is hard sometimes with the multiple screens. And I did just want to say hello to my co-worker, Maria, who has just joined. So she literally is joining CEA next week, and she'll be supporting Retrofit Assist. So I thought this would be a great opportunity for her to join and learn a bit as well. As Judy mentioned, I live in Fauquier, so the traditional territories of the Snakes people, Tunaha and the Siya, also journey through this region. So I'll give a quick intro on CEA, a quick intro on why we need to start moving quickly, and talk about Retrofit Assist, the concierge program that CEA is offering in a number of communities in the province, and hope to leave plenty of time for questions at the end. So I've got lots to get through, so please apologize if I talk a little quickly, but I want to make sure that I cover everything I'd hope to. So for those that aren't familiar with the Community Energy Association, we are a BC-based nonprofit that works across the province, now into other provinces actually, on their climate priorities. So everything from community energy emissions plans to coaching elected officials and staff in the industry, all the way through to kind of on-the-ground projects like Retrofit Assist. So I work in the built environment team, so I focus on mostly on-the-ground projects, which I really enjoy. I just want to, this picture demonstrates my personal commitment to climate action. So as Judy mentioned, we came back to the West Kootenai. So I was born and raised in Fruitvale, spent a long time away, and moved back in 2021. And my family arrived on June 30th to 40 degree weather and the start of the heat dome. And then we were evacuated 3 weeks later with the Octopus Creek wildfire, which you see pictured here. So I'm both professionally and very personally dedicated to supporting communities to start moving more quickly towards climate action. So at CEA, we talk about kind of the decade of climate action. So, you know, we know from a global scale and every level of government, you know, there are substantial commitments to get to net zero by 2050, as well as to, you know, reduce emissions by, you know, 40 to 50% by 2030. So hence, you know, we're well into that decade of climate action now to get us ready for the 2030 commitments. So to get us to those targets and help us meet those targets, you know, what can we do at the community level? And the three largest contributors, of course, from a community level are how we move around, where we live, and what we do with our waste. We've broken down these into what we call big moves at CEA. And of course, the one that I'll focus on today is the decarbonizing existing buildings through deep retrofits and fuel switching. In many parts of the province, especially more rurally, of course, you know, where you have less commercial institutional buildings, residential buildings account for a huge portion of community emissions. So this is a graphic from the RDKB, the Regional District of Kootenai boundary. And in their community, residential buildings account for a third of community emissions. So that's a big chunk of emissions that they can have an impact on. And I'm not sure how many of you have read the reports on the Pembina Institute on kind of deep retrofits and the action that we need to get to meet the 2030 targets. But, you know, in that report, they talk about, you know, the step code and all of that, that helps in the existing buildings. But of course, in the province, there is a lot of buildings that are already here that will be there in 2030. And we really need to focus on existing buildings. So in that report, it talks about 3% of buildings per year need to be retrofit to help us meet our 2030 target. So that's 30,000 homes a year. In perspective, you know, for Roslyn, that's 100 homes a year, which in a community of that size, that's a huge number of homes that need to start being retrofit every year to help us get to those targets. And then I just wanted to kind of go beyond the GHG targets and just, you know, yes, mitigating greenhouse gas emissions is crucially important for all of us as a society, but we also need to consider the adaptation side of things. You know, from the picture you saw my first summer back in BC, we really need to support communities to become more resilient and help homeowners so that they can stay safe and comfortable in their homes as we experience, you know, increased weather extremes and forest fire activity due to the climate change. So, with the urgency of retrofitting residential buildings, CA embarked on a journey starting in 2017 to develop a program that we could use to help communities to take action. So a number of research projects and small pilots were conducted, you know, with Metro Vancouver, Whistler and Squamish here on the call, and the Columbia Valley as well, so the East Kootenays for those that don't know the Columbia Valley. And all of these really led us to a concierge model being recommended. So basically a program that would better support homeowners to navigate kind of the complex process. Like lots don't even know where to start and are a bit overwhelmed. And then you layer in onto that, you know, multiple rebate programs. And, you know, in Roslyn and I think Whistler Squamish as well, there's even municipal levels. So you've got three levels of rebates with sometimes very different requirements. And so supporting homeowners to maximize the incentives that are available too. So detailed program design was undertaken with Whistler and Squamish to do a one-year pilot and with the communications plan as well. And really where we landed was on Retrofit Assist, you know, that as the program. And you can see the objective of the program is to support local governments in reducing GHG emissions. But ultimately, the way we're going to do that is by better supporting homeowners to get the work done in their homes to substantially reduce their energy use. So a full communication strategy was created for this program. We wanted it to be really clear. We didn't want some, you know, funky name that, you know, didn't really talk to what the program is about. So that's where we landed on the Retrofit Assist. Like, it is literally what the program is. It's assisting homeowners with their retrofit program. So we wanted it to be really clear on the brand, the messaging, and really the program expectations. So when homeowners are coming in, they really understand what they can expect from being involved in the program. And we also worked with the communities to do kind of a multi-pronged communications approach, you know, realizing that one way to get information out to community isn't going to work. So working closely with those communities to understand, you know, the avenues that they generally use in their communities to get information out, because we have found it is really different depending on the communities that you're working with, how they get information out to their residents. There's just a few more samples here. And I guess the one piece I wanted to talk to too is that we've really been trying to use local imagery. So, you know, on each of the community's web pages, you know, it is an image of their community. It's not, you know, a stock image that we've pulled. And then we're moving towards even more localized images. So the couple that you see in this picture is actually, they're a Roslyn couple that has done substantial retrofits in their home. And they welcome us into their home to take some pictures and utilize that imagery in the program. So the program itself, really, there's six steps, and you know this has been modified between kind of the first launch with Whistler Squamish and Roslyn, but this is where we are now with the program. And so basically, people apply online; it's free, no charge. We have done some in-person events and that supported people to apply as well, and then the Retrofit Assist team works with that homeowner to dig a little deeper, understand their priorities, understand a little bit about their home. And then we actually have them, and this is it, there's been different models, so we'll talk a bit about those nuances, but you know, the homeowner would then engage an energy advisor to understand kind of their home energy use, figure out a plan, then we work with them as well as program experts to support that homeowner to get a plan, including kind of the costing, you know, what is this work going to cost, which is a big one, of course, for people undertaking this work. Then we connect them with contractors, again, nuance for each of the programs, but we can speak to those, the different ways that worked. And then supporting homeowners to assess quotes, confirm rebate eligibility, and ultimately kind of make sure that they are satisfied with what's been done in their home. So Retrofit Assist launched in the Resort Municipality of Whistler and District of Squamish in May 2022. And I'll leave it to Maria and Corinne to maybe talk about kind of the nuances of the program and their on their experience. I wasn't deeply involved with this program, but you know, we did do a media release, lots of social media activity, lots of other outreach, and this program was supported by BC Hydro and the Real Estate Foundation of BC. So I think that's an important piece too. Like, there is some funding that needs to go behind these programs to provide this type of deep support for homeowners. And to date, and Corinne and Maria, please correct me if these are the current ones I could find. So we had 107 inquiries into the program, 63 people applied for the program, 37 are still active. And you know, there's various reasons that people drop out of programs, and we're actually more closely monitoring that with our new CRM as to, you know, is it that they've applied and then they realize, you know, maybe I'm not quite ready for this program yet and I need to come back in a year or so. Maybe I don't have the funds and I thought this is going to be completely covered by, you know, the program. So there's been some different reasons that people have dropped out of the program at various stages. And then we are just now starting to see the heat pumps installed through the Retrofit Assist program with Social Mission. Sorry, I didn't actually speak to that part. So when we launched in West Lawrence Promise, the focus was on fuel switching. So encouraging residents to move from fossil fuel furnaces to air source heat pumps. I'll just leave high level lessons learned, and Corinne Maria, and you guys can probably speak to lots of more lessons learned as you're kind of going through this process. But really the big one for homeowners is that there is a broad spectrum of support required. You know, it is overwhelming for most homeowners to embark on this journey. So supports are really required all along the way. And then when it comes to the rebate side of things, you know, it's really confusing for homeowners to have different requirements with different programs and just really wanting to make sure that homeowners and participants are able to maximize the rebates and incentives available. And on the contractor side, you know, we did have difficulty with the Whistler Squamish launch originally in engaging contractors. There are a few contractors in the province that need any additional work. So we've been really working on what that value proposition is to having them involved. You know, what is the value to them being involved when they don't need the extra work necessarily? And then just high level on the program side itself, you know, I mentioned kind of there was that focus on heat pumps. So we did realize, you know, that was going to be a bit limiting because when folks were getting their energy assessments done, you know, generally, unless you live in a newer, more efficient home, the recommendations are going to be focused on your envelope, right? The envelope first approach. So they're going to be talking about air sealing insulation. So, you know, wanting to make sure that we include those in future iterations. So we took a lot of those lessons learned, as well as the ones in the Columbia Valley heat pump pilot, to inform kind of the design in Rosland. And so this program launched with generous funding from Fortis BC. So Rosland is Fortis BC electric and gas territory. So we only had to work with one utility, and as well as the Columbia Basin Trust stepped up with some funding for this site. So we launched December 1st, so kind of 6 months after the Whistler Squamish one. And, you know, we did expand this program to include all measures. And this was really based on what the municipality wanted to include. So, you know, all sorts of building envelope, the mechanical systems. And we do have a couple of contractors that are supporting renewable energy systems if homeowners are authorized. With Rosin as well, you know, it wasn't developed to solely support, you know, income qualified participation, but we have been able to support homeowners that are eligible for the utility ECAP program, the Energy Conservation Assistance Program, as well as the province's income qualified program, because there's a few additional steps, of course, involved with that one, but there is more generous rebates as well. With Rosin, we did, of course, have a dedicated energy advisor. You know, we knew going into the program, it was already a limiting factor in that community. So we needed to make sure that we brought somebody on board that could support all of the homeowners involved, as well as technical experts and contractors. As I mentioned, contractors. I think anybody that's working with my other stuff, you know, I'm focused a lot on the contractor side of things with my work because it's a limiting factor for any climate action that we want to do related to homes. The communications material, as I mentioned, you know, we started to use more and more locally relevant imagery. And then really the communications plan has been focused on each community. So, you know, in Rosin, we were able to do postcards because, you know, it's a very economic way to get information out to the entire community. That's not the case in, you know, larger communities where that would be cost prohibitive. And to date in Rosin, so we've had 104 applications. So another difference that we did with Rosin is we actually did intake. So instead of kind of ongoing intake where participants can register at any time, with this one we had very focused intake. So we had one in December, for 50 people. We maxed out 2 weeks later, which was a very exciting time. We were like, oh wow, we didn't think we'd need to adjust this quickly. So we were able to start a wait list pretty quickly. And then we wanted to do it as cohorts so we could support that group through the process kind of together, you know, get all of the energy evaluations done, get all of their energy briefs done, connect them all with contracts, and then do the second phase. So we've just embarked on the second intake right now. And, you know, we didn't need to do any additional promotion because we had 45 people on a wait list. So once we get them through, we'll do some other measures to actually, we want to encourage more seniors to be involved. So we'll be doing some in-person sessions with Roslyn seniors. Lessons learned from this one, you know, the biggest one, I think this is both of them, that, you know, few participants are the same, right? They have different homes, they have different budgets, they have different priorities, and they really all require customized support. And then the second one, as I mentioned already or alluded to, was the contractor side. So we've really started framing Retrofit Assist as a concierge program for both contractors and homeowners, because for contractors, you know, their industry is changing just as rapidly, and, you know, they struggle to keep up with the industry with all of the changing rebate requirements. So really seeing that as a value for them to be involved is helping, you know, keep on top of all of the changes that are happening in their world. Couple other big ones, the financial barriers, of course, persist. You know, even with an income qualified program, which is much more generous support, there's still some barriers for folks. You know, it's still, you know, $9,500, which is generous for a rebate, that's not going to be enough for an income qualified participant to make that decision. You know, that's still leaving them with, you know, $5,000+ that they need to come to the table with, which will be prohibitive. And then the one that's really coming to light for us right now is electrical service upgrades. And we knew this going in, we just weren't sure on kind of how often we would run into this. So we are working actually closely with Fortis to see if we can address that issue, because, you know, it is a BCUC, but they need to bring them in terms of whether we can provide some additional supports for people that need electrical service upgrades to support heat pumps. So you can see a range there. You know, there's somebody that got a quote for $12,000. So $12,000 on top of your heat pump quote is going to be a non-starter for most people. So working closely with the utility to figure out how we can address that. High level, what's next? So we'll be relaunching next month. I've just put her in, Maria. Timing to be determined as we engage an energy advisor and contractors for the program this go round. And so they will be relaunching with a full suite of energy efficiency measures. As mentioned in Roslyn, the first intake, you know, we're working with those homeowners right now. They're connecting with contractors. We're on the quote side of things as we support kind of that second intake to get into the program and looking for additional funding. So with Roslyn, it was actually 2.5-year pilot. And so we're just looking for some additional funds to carry on after that. And we're also working towards a youth cohort and a regional retrofit cluster. So I won't be able to cover that in this time, but some exciting stuff that we're looking at there. Like, you know, how do you actually build this industry within a smaller community so that you've got all of the resources you need at hand in that community to support retrofits for homeowners? And I think, yeah, overall program, we are working with some community partners to look at financing options for programs. So there's the Canada Greener Homes option, you know, the $40,000 no interest loan. But, you know, that might not be enough for somebody to do a deep energy retrofit. And there might be limitations for people accessing those loans as well. So looking at additional financing mechanisms that can support these programs. And then what's exciting is we have additional communities kind of at various stages of planning. So I think people are starting to realize the importance of retrofits as helping meet climate targets, as well as kind of that community well-being I mentioned. So they've got lots of communities that are looking to do a retrofit program of sorts, and looking to the equity side of things as well. So that's all I wanted to cover. That was fast and furious, I think. There's my contact info. Please feel free to reach out. I can actually throw my email in the chat later if anybody wants to reach out to discuss the program in more detail. If people want to discuss, you know, what we're pondering on the youth climate core side or the regional retrofit cohort.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jessica. That was excellent. You'll see there's a couple of really interesting questions in the chat, and I'm just going to let you look at those and think about the answers while we hear from Maria next and then from Corinne. So So Maria is the climate action coordinator in the rural municipality of Whistler, and she's focused on accelerating Whistler's climate change priorities, which includes advancing initiatives designed to reduce community scale and organizational GHG emissions and tracking that. And I'm just going to turn it over to Maria to talk about the experience in Whistler.
Thanks, Judy. Hi, everyone. Nice to meet all of you. I'm new to this crew. I joined Whistler here in December, so it's nice to continuously meet other like-minded people. But yeah, so I've just, I guess, a little bit of context from Whistler's perspective. In terms of our emissions, our number one emission is passenger vehicle emissions, and number two is building-related emissions, like Jessica mentioned. In our community, natural gas specifically is a huge contributor of emissions, both in residential and commercial real estate. So for us, it's a large area that we need to tackle, and it's an area where we have limited regulatory tools. I think Jessica was mentioning, you know, we have tools on the new building side, the Zero Carbon Step Code, which we've just implemented to really regulate GHG emissions. But when it comes to existing buildings, it's really tough. And so that's why we jumped on this chance to do this retrofit assist program with CEA. And I'd say, first of all, our experience has been, you know, working with the CEA on this is fantastic. Like, having them as the program administrator has been a huge help for us. Having them help coordinate and have that kind of consistent, unified point of contact for homeowners, I think, is really valuable. And not just for homeowners, but also for us working with the municipality. So I think that's one area I really wanted to highlight. But I think what Jessica mentioned around the pilot program, so we launched in May of 2022, was a really great learning ground for us. And we learned a lot of things that we're incorporating into the relaunch. So specifically in Whistler, we saw probably some of the lowest uptake because of the way we defined the program originally. We were focused on heat pumps. And we had a lot of homeowners reaching out that were interested in other retrofit measures beyond just heat pumps. And not only that, but we had people who had electric baseboards in Whistler that were also interested in heat pumps, but weren't originally able to be included in the program. So I think our biggest learning was that we saw the need to really expand the program to other retrofit measures and kind of have more of that whole home approach. So we've really been focusing on that in the relaunch, as Jessica mentioned. In terms of applicants, at the end of 2022, we had 19 in Whistler, and then 14 of those were ineligible based on the program, the way we defined it. So I think that kind of points out that piece right there. So we're really hoping with the relaunch that we see those eligibility numbers increase. But the interest is certainly there in Whistler. So I think being able to kind of bridge that gap will be really helpful. The other piece that we saw was the contractor engagement that's also needed. So the interest of local contractors, specifically in the Sea to Sky, we share a lot of contractors a lot across Squamish and Whistler. So we realized the importance of engaging them as well, because they're such an important aspect of this program. So not only do we need to educate and engage homeowners, but the contractors as well. So I'd say that was a really key learning, and actually finding contractors who are willing and able to do the work when there is so much work to be done in the area, I think was a big challenge for us. And the other piece that was really interesting is with heat pumps. We've had a lot of discussion around noise and location regulations. And that was actually I'd say a positive outcome for us in Whistler, because we've been able to kind of collaborate with Squamish, also hear what Rossland is doing. So I think the collaborative nature of this project has been really helpful as problems arise. You know, we had some concerns with, you know, noise bylaws and what should be in place when it comes to heat pumps. And us in Whistler at first weren't sure how to handle that, but we were able to collaborate with Squamish, hear what they're doing, and hopefully implement some of that. So I'd say that's another great benefit, is the collaborative work with the other communities and kind of learning from each other as we go. So I made a couple notes, one things I wanted to mention about the relaunch. So we took those learnings and had many conversations with CEA about this relaunch. And I think expanding the program is one element of it that we really focused on. And then another element of it is trying to streamline even further. So kind of removing as many barriers as we can for the homeowners. And one of the barriers we'd seen was that accessing an EA is an additional step in getting quotes and going back and forth to do the initial energy assessment, which is so critical in the process of receiving these grants. So that's why we decided to incorporate a dedicated EA into our program. And the additional piece of this puzzle is that in Whistler, we also have a rebate top-up. So we have obviously the provincial and federal grants, and then we have a municipal one as well. So it adds, you know, an extra incentive, but also another layer of complexity for the homeowners. So we're hoping to streamline that process in the relaunch as well, so that when applicants come in, they can not only work with CEA to apply for those federal and provincial grants, but also the municipal one as well. And that's all streamlined through our dedicated EA as well. So we're hoping that that'll make the process a little bit easier for homeowners, and also for us too, because I currently process all the invoices for all of the homeowners reaching out, and they ask me lots of questions about heat pumps that way too. So I think the more that we can point everyone to one resource, I think the better it will be. And then I think the last piece is that in terms of the expansion I didn't mention was the multifamily homes. I think multifamily is an area where it's added complexity. So we've been focused on single family homes only. But now expanding
Hello,
to multifamily
Green
where
listeners.
They have
this
their
is
own,
Sarah Waterfowl Fowler
meters
at the Waterfowl Podcast.
So still a
and
bit of a
you are
there. As you know, strata, et cetera, are still an added complexity to this problem. But I think starting by expanding the way we are, I think, is a really great way to see how that goes and kind of work towards that. But yeah, I'd say that's kind of high level our experience so far. I'm happy to answer any questions, but
I am
just want to reiterate how great it's been working with the CEA on this project.
Thanks so much, Maria. That was great. And I wondered if Corinne wanted to add any thoughts. Corinne Ledoux is a senior energy specialist at the District of Squamish, BC.
Yeah, thanks. I don't really have a whole lot more to add to what Maria and Jessica said. Our context is a little bit different here in Squamish compared to Whistler, in that over 3/4 of our homes are single family homes. Over half of those are single family detached and a bit fewer single family attached. So that's the difference between Squamish and Whistler. But I'll echo also the piece about the contractors. Even being local or in such close proximity to Vancouver, where we have access to more contractors, we're still struggling to find the contractors to join our program. As Jessica and Maria already alluded to, they're already really busy. So trying to figure out that extra hook to get them involved. And so also wanting to leverage other things that are happening in the province as well, like the HPCN, the Home Performance Contractor Network, trying to align everybody kind of in the industry to kind of follow the same process, if you will, and be more of a supportive, integrated approach. I can only imagine, well, I know from speaking to other people in other more rural areas, the challenge with the contractor piece. So hopefully we can unlock that one sooner than later. What we are seeing here, we have a lot of HVAC contractors. It will be interesting as we do expand to include the other contractors in the program. Right now, we'd be bringing up insulation contractors, for example, and fenestration contractors, bringing them up from the city. So it's a bit of a, we can maybe entice our local contractors to become HPCN members by saying, hey, if you want to secure local work, we encourage you to follow this path. Otherwise, we bring people up from the city to do the work. So just trying to work with the contractor community to create that network locally. It's interesting challenges and exciting to see where we're going to go with this.
Thanks so much, Corinne. I'm just going to refer to some questions in the chat, make sure everyone's questions got answered, and we'll have it for the recording as well. Gabby had asked about whether the municipalities are funding this, and Tammy clarified that municipalities contribute financially to the programs, but they're supported through fundraising efforts by CEA, which has brought in money from entities like BC Hydro, Real Estate Foundation of BC, Fortis BC, Columbia Basin Trust. I was wondering if anyone out of you could speak to what is this actually costing the municipalities themselves? Do you have any ideas in terms of staff time or other costs? Jessica?
Yeah, I can, and you know, it has been shifting just because, you know, as we refine the tools that we have available, the next iteration is actually much more economic to bring on. So, you know, there was a lot of back end work required in terms of the communications, setting up the CRM, all of that stuff. But Tammy has referred to about $200,000 per year for a community to do a program like this. So Tammy is on the call if she wants to add anything to that. But I know that's a number that we're kind of using right now as an estimate for people, just so they really understand that, you know, it is an investment to do this type of deep support for homeowners.
That's really thanks, Jess. And just to clarify, yeah, so the $200,000 is the approximate cost for the total administration, but the municipal contributions are very much individualized and based on what the communities are able to financially contribute. And then CEA works with the communities to do the fundraising to make up the balance. So from year to year, depending on the municipal budgets and availability, the communities contribute different amounts, and then we work collaboratively to fundraise the remaining amount that's required to run the program.
So some of that $200,000 could be covered by funds then?
Yeah, like I say, the municipalities contribute as much as they're able to that each year, and then we work to fundraise the rest through our partners.
Okay, great, that's really helpful. And I know there was a question about checking out eligibility, and Jessica said during onboarding a series of questions so that you can inquire to make sure people are eligible. But is that still an issue at all, people applying and not being eligible? Is that something that you're still working on?
So yeah, so to clarify, that was people asking about the income qualified stuff. So, you know, with Rosalind, you know, they really wanted to try and include most people. So it is still single family dwellings, right? So that is still the focus, but you know, it wasn't a particular heating type that, you know, there wasn't that side of it. So a little bit different, so a bit more open, but on the income qualified side. And again, we didn't want to get into a place that we were verifying income, all that, because, you know, nobody that's in an income qualified situation wants to do that more than once. So we're just, you know, we just asked gently, we know what the bounds are for each of the programs, and we just asked, do you think he might qualify for these programs? If they say yes, then we can go, we have a few more questions that we ask, and then we're able to guide them to either ECAP or IQP. And then we are working closely again with Fortis on the ECAP side, just to make sure that those people that we are sending over to those programs, we're able to kind of get them back in once they're done with that process on that side of it.
Great. And then there was a question about whether the BC and or federal governments have been interested in funding these programs.
I'm not sure of that. We're in lots of conversations in terms of this needs to be more than just every municipality needing to go find their own funding. So there's lots of research and work being done on what a model looks like across the province. But again, Tammy's in some of those higher level conversations on that side.
Yeah, thanks. It's I'd say there's certainly interest. We're working on exactly what that looks like. And again, you know, CEA is only one program administrator within the province, and of course across the country, that offers these. And so having to work with the provincial and federal governments to create a thriving ecosystem of program administrators and program supports is really the big challenge. So we're in those conversations, we're looking for solutions. We're also in discussion with like philanthropic partners to see how we can scale up, because as you can imagine, the scale that's required to meet our collective GHG emissions reduction targets for retrofits is massive. It's certainly beyond the ability of, you know, one local government to fund by themselves. So this is a large scale problem. And so we're working to aggregate some of those opportunities for these large scale funders. And some of those definitely include other levels of government.
Great, thanks so much, Tammy. So there were also questions about contractors, but I'm thinking this might have been answered. So I'd just like to open it up to people here who might have a question they'd like to ask. Wave your hand madly or speak up, because we're not too big a group.
I'll maybe add one thing on the contractors that has started to kind of bubble up, which I found really interesting, is I think contractors are starting to see the opportunity now that is coming, that is here, that is coming, and really wanting to prepare. So it's been neat to see a few that are like, they've been working with larger building companies and are kind of cleaving off. So in Roslyn, we've had actually two of those already that are like, you know what, I kind of want to live and work in this space. And from a kind of from a community perspective as well, like they want to be involved in their community in different ways. So that really warms my heart to see that, you know, there is a bit of that momentum. And I think, as Tammy mentioned, it's about showing that there is an industry and demonstrating that this isn't, it's not an ebb and flow of, you know, a rebate program. This is something that's going to be longstanding for them to get involved in.
Thanks, Jessica. Gabby, you had a question?
So much. This is really great. So wonderful to learn from what you're doing in BC, and in particular with smaller municipalities. I know we're struggling with that in Ontario as well. But one of the questions I had is, with the concierge, let's just say, has there been any kind of indication that this might work for aggregating demand that could then be passed on to contractors and then build that value proposition for the building science training that we know we have to get increase in the contractor world? Because they all, like, we know they know how to do windows, they know how to do insulation. It's the matter of the building envelope and making sure that we, the integrity of the building envelope is there. And I was curious, like, with the concierge, have you found that there's some people who are like, you know, I'd love to do a retrofit, but I don't want to take on the part-time job of doing a retrofit, and I don't have a general contractor who can manage this for me. Is there kind of matchmaking that is taking place between those types of customers and general contractors who have that building science, who can serve that role, play that role for those customers?
Go ahead, Jessica.
No, so you go first.
Thanks. I can speak a little bit in terms, and it kind of ties into what Jeremy put into the chat as well. So with the Home Performance Contractor Network, which is British Columbia specific, it's about making sure that the contractors have the required basic training or fundamental training. And it all starts with the House as a System training module. And that's across the board for all types of contractors, and soon it's going to be expanding to general retrofit contractors, EAs as well. Usually they have that information already. Really finding, making sure that there is the appropriate training for the specific measure that's being implemented, absolutely. And understanding that when you're doing a single retrofit, it's going to impact other components of the home. And so we really want to make sure that all the contractors are knowing this. So through Retrofit Assist, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tammy and Jessica, but my understanding is that the contractors who are part of Retrofit Assist would also be HPCN members, because that also unlocks the door to access the provincial rebates. So just kind of, we're trying to line everything up through Retrofit Assist, and hence the concierge piece. And I think it's early days yet to figure out like how to really help each homeowner. As Jessica alluded to, each homeowner's situation is going to be a little different. And so how best to come alongside them and guide them through that process. It is quite complex. It's extra money to have a general contractor, like up to 20% more, have a general contractor oversee the work. Not available for provincial rebates if you're doing the installations yourself. So you have to bring contractors in. So it's quite complex, a lot of moving parts, but we want to make sure that the work's done properly. We want to absolutely avoid a leaky condo crisis 2.0, like 100% avoid that. So yeah, a lot of education, a lot of awareness. We put on a couple engagement events here, teaching the contractors about the rebate programs and introducing HPCN at those events. So we got really good feedback and turnout for those. So just keeping that conversation going.
Great, thanks, Trin. Jessica, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I'll just maybe add a couple of things. So, you know, with Rosin, because we have the retrofit assist contractors, so we do have a couple of general contractors that are involved in that program that are keen to take on kind of those larger projects. So we're looking at it kind of two lenses. Like, you know, if somebody is just getting insulation, they want one measure done, sure, we can just send them to a particular contractor. But those that want to undertake, you know, multiple measures, then we're engaging a general contractor. And again, we do have kind of the technical experts on the side that we can tap into as well. But just to maybe go back to my high level comment on kind of that regional retrofit cluster. So this stuff fascinates me. Many moons ago, people that work with me know, like my wine sketch I did many moons ago in terms of what a framework would look like, which involves exactly that, Gabby, is like, who's that person that's going to lead the charge and make sure all the people are doing their work? Because, you know, in a build, people are getting used to kind of that integrated design concept and, you know, having everybody at the table. On the retrofit side, that is completely new for people to operate in that way. So we will be putting an application in the fall to see what that looks like in the region. You know, who are the players that you need to have at the table to scale up this type of work? So we're starting to dabble in it a bit, but I'm really excited for our application in the fall to actually really dive into that with. And then it also includes, you know, who are the workforce development agency in the region? Who are the post-secondary, you know, agencies in the region? So, you know, the cluster needs to be larger than the current contractors we have.
Perfect. Thank you.
If I can jump in real quick to say also, the builders are licensed. So for new construction, there's licensing, there's continuous professional development credits that need to be maintained. So there's a lot of training opportunity there. And what we're seeing and talking to our industry peers is that there is a gap for retrofit contractors. There is no licensing requirement. There's no specific training requirement. So HPCN is filling that gap with their fundamental training and advanced training in each discipline. So I'm really excited for that to grow and expand because we do want to make sure that this work is done properly.
Great. Thank you both so much. John, your question?
Thank you. I'm quite enthusiastic about this. I think it offers very good value compared to new builds, which are always expensive, it seems. It has value in terms of adaptation, in terms of extreme heat, extreme cold, wildfire smoke. It also seems that we have a missing piece in BC. It would seem to be really well suited to PACE funding or PACE financing, but have you explored that at all? Trying to get the government to bring in PACE financing for this kind of work?
Tackle that one. Yeah, so the PACE financing was actually part of the ministerial directive from the new government for them to bring that in. But we understand that it's not highest on their priority list, and certainly at least for the residential sector, there may be a commercial PACE program coming, but we understand that residential PACE is not imminent in the province of BC. And so through our work, we're looking at other financing mechanisms, and we're exploring opportunities for third-party financing. We have a number of communities that we're actively working with local credit unions to see how they can support programs like this, and other PACE-like funding that we might be able to access, as I was kind of mentioning, like larger philanthropic injections of cash by becoming that aggregator and bringing to them instead of, you know, a dozen houses, a few hundred houses, and saying, here's a financing opportunity for you. So unfortunately, there's no PACE opportunity officially in BC. One community, Saanich, has sort of found a bit of a loophole that they've been working through in terms of a pilot, but the scalability of that isn't very easy or simple. So we're looking for other mechanisms. But yeah, PACE would be great, but we're doing what we can in the meantime to find other financing routes for homeowners to support their work in this area.
Thanks for the question, John, and thanks, Tammy, and Climate Caucus is working hard the last while in our Help Cities Lead campaign to get this going, so any support or alternatives are much appreciated. Ian, you had a question?
I did. First, thank you so much for these programs. This is really wonderful to see. As many of you know, Pembina has been working on their reframed initiative. We've focused mostly on multifamily buildings. And I'm actually doing life cycle costs for the schematic designs of our six buildings. And what I'm finding is that there's a pretty much a positive return on investment or life cycle cost on mechanical and electrical, heat pump retrofits. But as soon as you start touching the envelope, then that return disappears pretty quickly, and it becomes hard to justify fiscally, given our current rewards, etc. Just wondering whether or not you're finding a similar experience with your Part 9 buildings across the province.
Jessica, did you want to try that one, or is that someone else?
Yeah, no, I was trying to unmute there. We're just getting to the work in Roslyn, so we will see on that. But yeah, any studies, reports I've seen, the payback on a full envelope retrofit is hard to justify if you're only looking at operational savings, right? And, I personally think we need to start those other intrinsic things, human health. Like, there's a lot of other benefits to people being able to be in their homes safely and comfortably. So I think we need to really start looking at those externalities that are beyond just the operating costs when we're kind of determining those ROIs. But at the time being, yeah, they're really expensive. And there are some other studies and research projects that would show, it's actually more cost effective and the life cycle assessment is better to kind of tear it down if it's really, really old, if you're able to reuse some of the materials, etc. But I think that human health side for me on the envelope piece is crucial for us to start incorporating more so.
Thanks, Jessica.
Just FYI, all six of our buildings, the schematic designs, now incorporate both better filtration and mechanical cooling in at least portions of the building. So, the risk of overheating, heat stress, and for that matter, fire events is very definitely become top of the mind of the design teams doing the schematic design. So, glad you're thinking that way.
Yeah, thanks, Ian. Those co-benefits can be huge. Go to Tammy and then Sarah.
Thanks, Ian. And Ian, let me just say back to you, thanks for the programming that Pembina does. It's really exciting to see so much work being done in the MERB space, and we follow what you're working on closely. So thank you, and congratulations to you for all of the hard work that's happening for the Reframe project. But I just want to say that I think the awareness of house as a system that we try to bring to homeowners and that we try to help contractors as well to understand is that by improving the envelope, you can also reduce the size and requirements for your mechanical system. And so that not only reduces your upfront capital costs, but of course your ongoing operational costs. So there's a co-benefit as well from addressing the envelope when it comes to your mechanical. So by thinking about that house as a system, we can reduce our operational and capital costs even further and improve that ROI when we're just looking at mechanical. So in addition to all of the other things that Jess mentioned there.
Great, thanks, Tammy. Sarah?
Thank you. Yeah, my ears kind of perked up when somebody mentioned demolishing, because I feel like there's definitely factors of the equation that are being left out, that aren't being measured. I know that we have a lot to learn from our history. The West doesn't seem to have any. There's continuously improvement to only the modern survives, but a lot of things, like I have a friend who's a affordable housing provider in Vancouver, and she owns many old buildings, SROs, and one of them had a tenant 58 years. The oven still works. Everything is still functional. These are things that modern systems don't really have on older things. So there's definitely stuff to be said or sort of parts out of the equation, that those X factors that, you know, in some ways, those older ways, I know that, you know, we call it heat sinks now, but it used to be things like root cellars or, you know, thermal mass rocks in your, whatever, rock walls in your basement, those sort of things. And now we have new names for them, but they're really old technologies that we're kind of recycling. And I know that in my community, there is no new builds. There is no, you know, step codes or any of those kinds of things. Those are all pie in the sky, lofty things for cities. We are definitely sort of the last across the finish line. And it's important for us not to be left out. So I really want to focus on things like heritage and how important that is to teaching new people how far we've come and how great it is to kind of learn those old ways. Thanks.
Thank you, Sarah. And is it Jeremy?
Yeah, I'll just briefly echo what Sarah was saying. A lot of people who come from England, as I do, always find it funny, the definition of old here. Definition of something to be torn down because buildings, they're often lost for hundreds of years, and some castles are still standing for thousands of years, and it's how it goes. But that's not really what I wanted to talk about. I kind of wanted to echo and build on what Jessica was saying. I think the non-operational savings are really important. And in many ways, the gateway to getting engaged with folks. People want to paint that home. They want a more comfortable home. They want less mold, or they want to add cooling in the summer. This is how, in my experience, most people think about their projects. They don't think, I want to do a whole home retrofit. They don't necessarily think, I want to save 50, 60, 70, 80% on my bill. They want to do a particular thing. So I'm just curious if there was any leveraging of kind of those other more standard desires to do upgrades, and if there's a handholding to kind of bring people along to retrofits or deep energy retrofits from a different starting point.
Jessica,
Want to start, and then I'm happy to add anything.
Sure. Yeah, you bring up a good point, Jeremy. With the diversity of people, like the homeowners or residents, who's motivated to do a retrofit, and what's the motivation to do a retrofit or a renovation? And that's absolutely going to become imperative when we want to hit our targets. For our numbers alone in Squamish, we have, our target is to retrofit 40% of the existing homes. And so that's 3,000 homes by 2030. And in our relaunch, we're targeting 60 homes. So we're actually going to probably be getting the people who are those that are of the mindset where they want to do this work, they're motivated intrinsically to do this work into their homes. There's a whole other range of motivators for people to spend their money in different ways. And so we're really going to have to, as collectively, figure out how to engage the wider audience. I'd like to point out to the oneearth.org. The piece of work was a 7 motivations for lighter living in British Columbia. So it's specific to BC, and identified 7 motivation attitudes is what they've called it. So where people are in their life journey, like, are they a young family? Are they retired? Are they something in between? And what motivates them to take lighter living actions? So that's very much going to have to become part of the conversation when we want to go beyond that initial 10, 15, 20% to get up to, in our case, the 40% of homes. We're obviously not there yet. We're figuring out the details of how to get the concierge program going and working out some kinks at the very beginning. But very soon we're going to have to crack that nut and figure out how to engage a wider audience. And actually, like you're saying, and tying back to what Ian's point is, through the retrofit work, it's a bit of a shift. I find it as a bit of a shift for return on investment in terms of The recommendation will likely never be, hey, replace your windows or your insulation, add more insulation, just because. It's identifying the end of life opportunities. Hey, your windows are failing. You've had them for 40 years. You have ice buildup. You'd likely want to replace your windows. You can go double pane, but you can go the extra mile and go triple pane, and there's rebates to help offset that incremental cost. So the return on investment is there for that example, if you're going to be replacing your windows anyways. And then leveraging opportunities like, hey, you're changing your cladding on your home. This is a good opportunity to look at exterior insulation or outsolation to add in addition to. And so figuring out ways to leverage jumping off points for different homeowners, depending where they're at in their renovation dreams and plans and journeys.
Thanks so much, Corinne. I see we're getting near the top of the hour. Maybe we have time for one more. Trina?
Trina.
Thank you. Speaking to, again, what was just mentioned, the range of owners and the motivations, and kind of speaking a little bit selfishly as well. I'm a counselor in Pell River, but also a homeowner who's doing some work on my house. And, you know, between contractors not being available and also funding and also just like having a DIY mentality, I'm doing it myself. And I know for, you know, renovation contractors, there isn't the certification like there are for general contractors. And so if it involves education for, you know, renovators, I'm just wondering about the opportunity for education for homeowners who are undertaking work themselves. I try to do a lot of research online, but if there was a bit of direction, I could try to make sure that the work that I do, and I will do irregardless of whether or not there are
rebates,
these programs, I will do it myself. I know that there, I just see an opportunity here, even though ideally it's done by trained contractors. There will be times where it is not done by trained contractors. And so what about those types of situations and those homeowners who are doing retrofits on their own? I just see a gap there and an opportunity for that work that's going to get undertaken anyways.
Good question. Thanks, Trina. Maria, did you want to respond to that?
No, I actually had my hand up with regards to the previous question. So I don't know if anyone else wants to take that one.
Jessica, saw you nodding listening to Trina.
So as part of the CUNY Clean Energy Transition, which is, you know, separate from Retrofit Assist, but, you know, part of, because it's about increasing kind of capacity in communities to do this type of work. So, yeah, we have been focused a lot on the contractors, but we're actually planning some builder barbecues right now, but they will be at the local home hardware stores and open to anybody to come. So we are kind of looking at what are those opportunities really around me, especially, like, everybody does it themselves, right? They're not hiring somebody to come and do it. So I really appreciate those comments, Trina, and just providing some easy to use resources, right? And especially when it comes to just kind of those high level things that you really need to consider when you're doing the work, so that you're not, you know, impacting your home in a negative way. So we will be dabbling in that in the fall with some tools, but everything that we do is actually available on our website. So we do some homeowner outreach and engagement as well. And we were actually just chatting internally the other day about how we better get those resources on our website to enable anybody to access that, right? So that if you are doing a retrofit program, whether you're a retrofit project, whether you're a homeowner or a contractor, you can access the same resources.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I just want to say thank you to our speakers, to Jessica, Maria, and Corinne, and all of you contributed so much to this discussion. It was really, really rich. I learned an awful lot here. And so we will share the recording and the slides with you. And thank you all for coming. And if we don't see you for a little bit as we approach summer, we'll see you later on. We've got one more electeds call on electeds and school trustees call on June 1st for those of you who fit into those categories, looking at how they can work together. So I think that'll be really special. Olivia, what time is that on June 1st? Is that 11 Pacific?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you'll see the invite for that in the newsletter. If any of you aren't on the newsletter, please just go to our website and click join and you'll get on that. So thank you all so much and have a great day.
It was lovely meeting you all.
Thanks. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
And that is...
Recording stopped.
Yay, recording stopped. That is the, what am I on here? We got small and rural. That's what that is. Let's see. Small and Rural Communities, Climate Caucus. I'm a big fan of Climate Caucus. I feel like they helped me get through the pandemic, and they also helped me live here.